You're listening to the CXO Challenge podcast by itnews.com.au, where we talk to technology leaders about how they are breaking new ground in their IT strategy and delivery. When we last held the CXO Challenge in 2014, the theme was navigating digital disruption. At that time, digital was new, and executives were under immense pressure to deliver. Most of those first-generation digital transformations are now complete. What's interesting is that 2021 is the first year since that is shaping to be as technologically and culturally disruptive. Business recovery is advancing, technology budgets are returning, and there is broad excitement for a new range of emerging technologies and opportunities. Join me, Ry Crozier, Editor-in-Chief of IT News, and the rest of the editorial team, our Deputy Editor Justin Hendry, and journalist Kate Webber, each week as we asked Australia's top technology and digital executives what excites them most and how they are raising the stakes for the next big change. On the show this week is Roger Wall, the Chief Digital and Information Officer at major Australian rail, infrastructure and building company John Holland. The company has recently embarked on a comprehensive 3-year digital transformation journey. We begin by exploring Roger's role before moving into the key pillars and systems up for transformation.
Thank you for agreeing to have a bit of a chat today.
My pleasure, totally. So I moved here about 14 months ago. And I was brought in for two things. So one was to kind of transform the IT function. And the second one was to lead the digital transformation for the company. And I guess the most remarkable thing I found is how everybody's in sync on the executive leadership team and supportive and investing in these technologies and the culture changes and shifts that are going to occur. So I'm pleasantly surprised after 1 year, as far as how comfortable, how much progress we're making, how supportive the organization is as a whole. And the network that I've gained in Australia of other IT leaders and other functions such as Gartner and Evanta and a lot of other functions that I'm quite active in. So it's a great community that fosters innovation, and the company is super supportive investing in innovation. So very, very happy after my first year.
Why now for digital transformation, and particularly large-scale digital transformation? What drove that decision-making within John Holland and therefore is now a package of work that you're leading?
That's a very good question, and there are several parts to this answer. It's almost like a perfect storm of catalysts that have come together. So first, the engineering construction industry is very, very digitally underinvested and immature. Actually, within Australia, only farming and agriculture are behind us as far as investment on a recent survey that I saw. So there's a real chance to make incremental gains by investing now because it's so underinvested. The second thing I would mention is technology companies like Amazon, AWS, and Microsoft, they're now investing in our industry beyond the core services like cloud and applications. They've built an engineering construction center of excellence where they didn't have it 2 years ago. So they want to partner with us. They want to use our research and development in our industry. Microsoft invested $5 billion last year in IoT. And I'll talk in a minute about how IoT is the latest technology. IoT has set itself up well for the construction engineering industry. So the investment is there from the big tech companies where it wasn't there before, specifically in our industry. Federal and state governments in Australia are now saying, if you can make some changes that are industry-wide for the industry, we'll match your investment, as well as universities like Monash and different universities are saying, let's develop something with you, and we'll match your dollar for dollar if it's something that's for the good of the entire industry. So the investment's there from big tech, the investment is there from government, because everybody's going to reap the benefits from a safety productivity perspective, because most of our customers are government, obviously. The next thing is, emerging technologies, they are now more advanced in supporting our industry. And I'll give you an example of that. We're very project-centric, very decentralized. We're building Sydney Football Stadium here. We're building a tunnel there. We're building something in Western Australia. We're building things all over Australia, but they're very decentralized. With 5G plus edge computing, IoT can now make a bigger difference for us, meaning we can get a lot of data. We can process it, whether it be labor productivity, GPS tracking, whether it be vehicle, material movements. the innovations of 5G and edge computing lend themselves to our industry better than they ever did before. We get large amounts of data and compute power everywhere we work, where we couldn't do that even 2 or 3 years ago. Another factor that really plays into our industry well is there are some enterprise project management systems that are built just for us. And I think later we'll talk about systems and applications, but they're building some industry-specific applications for us that cover the entire project lifecycle, which make it much more possible for us to transform digitally our processes as well as our systems. And I'll talk about that later, but we have a philosophy of using best-in-class systems that are fit for purpose and connecting them instead of trying to jam everything into an ERP, which doesn't work well. And I'll explain why later on, and I think in the future question. So that off-the-shelf operation system that's built just for us is very, very important. And I would say, finally, John Holland's executive leadership, led by CEO Joe Barr, are all digitally savvy, and they're all very much supportive of the fact that digital transformation can give us a competitive advantage, safety, productivity, sustainability, in a lot of different ways. This technology can help us gain traction in the industry, help us win more deals, and help the lives of our people.
Just stepping back to something you mentioned at the start of those comments was around the sort of traditional underinvestment within the sector and the opportunity to, I think you mentioned, to get incremental gains. I just want to maybe draw that out a little bit, because a lot of what you mentioned after that is probably not something that you would classify necessarily as an incremental gain. There are a lot of emerging technologies and things like digital twin and IoT, which when you look at the way that the construction and engineering sectors have really picked those up in the past sort of 12 months, 18 months, they're more step change gains rather than incremental. So I just wondered if you could maybe talk a little bit around the gap between those two areas. So what the opportunity is around the incremental stuff versus what looks like more the larger opportunity and where a lot of the vendor money is being invested, which is more the real kind of leap or step change technologies.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'll break it into two things. So when I say incremental, it can also be foundational. The way that we see the environment coming together, all those factors that I talked about, each of them in themselves they're important, but when they're put together, it's going to be a huge change. Obviously, it's going to be a step change. It's going to be, I would call it, disruptive. Those things put together, a lot of incremental things that happen, modernizing your systems, connecting them for consistent data to the mobile, real-time reporting, consistency of processes across the project, and the consistency in future projects and things. Those are all incremental or foundational things that come together that allow us to make those step changes or, like I say, disruptions. Digital twin in itself, if you don't have a really good foundation of the engineering and design, if you don't have a good foundation of the core systems that support and the data that flows through them, you're going to make some good changes from a digital twin. But to really do a digital twin that has a big change of design and construct, operate and maintain, which is our life cycle. So we design a railroad, build a railroad, and then maintain that railroad afterwards. To make a huge change across that entire life cycle, you really need to have the core systems in place, connected data. You can't do it piecemeal like I see some other companies tend to do some flashy things, but they don't have all the foundational pieces, right? So they may just do a design and construct and not an operate and maintain opportunity because they don't have the whole life cycle together. So yeah, you're 100% correct. It's a lot of foundational and incremental changes that are leading us to, at this time, those four or five things that we put together are leading us to a disruption in the industry, especially in Australia.
I think it's probably a good chance now to seg into just maybe walking through a little bit about the transformation itself, and particularly the cadence of the transformation, because we started talking about some of the foundational elements there. We need to do some of the more advanced stuff, but it'd be useful, I guess, to get a sense of what some of the pillars and packages are.
Yeah, so I'll talk about a few pillars, three of them. The first one is a foundational thing that's very, very important, but some companies jump to just the shiny things like emerging tech, and they don't do this one well. This one is modernized and connected functional and collaboration systems and processes. So what I mean by that is we have some really good systems that we've developed for over 30 years. Our finance system we developed for over 30 years. But that's not going to make the step change that allows you to be flexible, growing as a company. So we decided we need to scope our enterprise systems quite well, modernize them and the processes that are aligned with them. So this is the first piece. It's your enterprise functional and collaboration systems. What we're doing over the next 3 years is, first, it's finance system. We've selected Workday, quite a dynamic company, as I'm sure you know. And we were quite surprised that they stacked up so well against SAP and Oracle and Dynamics from a functional as well as a innovative company. So we're moving this 30-year-old system, which has served us very, very well. We're moving to an out-of-the-box product from Workday. And by doing that, we're updating our processes as well to meet the system halfway. So this year, we're focused on the finance system modernization. We're starting the operations system modernization, which is your entire project lifecycle. I don't know how much construction background you have, but it's basically a few products together, a few processes together. You bid for a project, a tender, you have an estimation of what it's going to cost. Then you have the project execution of the cost control, scheduling, budgeting, forecasting. You do a lot of operational procurement, all the concrete, all the facades and everything. This life cycle, it's served very well in a system that's specific for it. So that later this year, we're going to the operations system on top of the finance system and connecting the two of them in a lot of different places. And what other companies try to do, they try to put everything in an Oracle or an SAP. When Oracle and SAP, they build a finance product that will work for any industry, whether it's finance, construction, banking, retail. When you try to put your project or your commercial processes into that system, it's not natural. And you end up, you know, instead of spending $10 million, you spend $50 million, and you continually have to update it, right? So since, and you know, there's two or three companies that have built this construction end-to-end project system, the right thing to do is to go to that system, update our processes across that project lifecycle, and then connect them to the finance system. And then the third piece is our health, safety, environment. So another very important enterprise system that we have, we're modernizing that at the same time this year, and we're plugging that into the other two. We use SuccessFactors as our people system, which is pretty modern. So those four: people, finance, operations, and health and safety and environment, they are what I consider our enterprise systems that are going to be connected, modernized, consistent data across all of our projects. Then you plug in your collaboration systems to pull into our data lake. External factors, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats out of the environment, what our competitors are doing, how we can do things for the good of the industry. This is all the things over the next 3 years that we're modernizing, connecting, and we have a very rigorous list of activities, investments, deliverables for that enterprise system and process area. So the first one is systems. The second one is data. So as you can imagine, building a data warehouse, a data lake, connecting that, corroborating that across the enterprise with digital dashboards, real-time reporting to the mobile. We built that lake now, but a lot of it's going to be manual or from legacy systems and interim systems until we get to the final operating model. So you'll see that data strategy, the outputs from it will evolve in steps over the next 3 years from a little bit manual now to very, very automated and real-time in the end. And the third is emerging technology. So as you know, some of those emerging technologies we can plug in right now. And I think a future question talks about that, but you can do a lot of digital twin on its own. You can do a lot of Internet of Things, tracking of materials, vehicles, people, all the contact tracing that you do for the pandemic. All those things are available now and you can use them. But that will evolve over time to be holistically used across the environment. That will evolve to other technologies such as robotics and 3D printing, which are getting much more dynamic and much more complicated, much more complex as far as what we can use. 3D printing, I'll just use an example. It can be used now to build a city, but it has to be a modular city, small pieces, repeatable pieces, and things of that nature. Complicated construction is a lot more difficult to do from a 3D printing perspective, but that technology is getting much stronger in complex steel compositions, complex concrete compositions. All of those things are now starting to be done via 3D printing. And as they get bigger and on scale, there's a big environmental impact of doing some things with 3D printing as opposed to the traditional construction methods. So there, we're looking at environmental factors also. So I would also like to mention that the systems, the emerging tech and data, those pillars are underpinned by security, infrastructure, and mobility. Very important to, I can't state enough that anything that we do has a security filter to it, where our data is protected, backed up. We've added a lot of technologies from a multi-factor authentication, and we're strong into AWS's cloud from a very secure perspective and flexible perspective, as well as Azure. So, and those other 5G that I talked about, SD-WAN, the other technologies that we're looking at that are really fortifying these emerging tech application and data spaces.
So there's a lot to unpack from there. Just firstly, and this I think goes back to something you mentioned at the start of the conversation, which was around not necessarily having a single big ERP platform to base this off and rather breaking it up into sort of different components. I just wondered how you approached that internally, because you mentioned that the existing finance / ERP is sort of 30 years old. How do you go about encouraging that change internally, or was there the appetite within, say, finance or within, say, it's those core business areas to make a big shift?
I was quite lucky, to be honest with you. When I joined, the company already felt that they needed to move to some connected best-in-class systems, because from a process perspective, our processes continue to evolve, but we need them to be in systems, like I said, that are modern, connected. The roles and responsibilities and the processes move along with it into these. So for instance, the first, I'll use an Australian expression, the first cab off the rank is the finance system. And our CFO is super supportive of, let's get in something that's very much out of the box. Let's have our processes meet halfway. We're going to roll it out over the next year. So it's going to take time. We're going to have all the right people are involved. The finance team are the ones who picked the system, obviously, because they're the users of it and the owners of it. IT just guided them to get it to that conclusion. So they're very open and supportive of adjusting processes, because they know that our business has gotten so dynamic and so big as it continues to grow. And we have multiple business units, even though it might be a project execution, that execution's happening in rail, that execution's happening in infrastructure, that execution's happening in building Sydney Football Stadium. So there's different kinds of projects. We need those processes and systems to be consistent across all of them. So the appetite was there in the company. And I would also like to shout out to our business leaders. A couple of them came from the UK, where I think they're a little bit more dynamic as far as investing in technologies. And Australia was a little bit behind, but catching up now. So they were very supportive of moving to standard systems, looking at emerging technologies and how it all fits together. So business leaders, functional leaders like the CFO are very supportive. It's just the change management and communication is very, very important. So when we did the RFP for the FMS, the finance management system, it was a process of a few months of days of the whole finance community sitting through the presentations, understanding how their roles and responsibilities would change, how the system would look and feel. They tested them out. So huge involvement from the business up front, from a change management and communication perspective. That was really, really key, that supported from the top all the way through the worker levels and involvement from them. That's really crystally the most important thing, is the involvement and the change management.
And what's the plan like for transitioning some of these systems? Are you going to run the old and new in parallel for a certain period and then make the switch? Are you going to take how much sort of existing data across into the new systems, or just sort of make a clean break? What's the kind of strategy?
So we have some mega projects, as you might know, that are like 10-year projects. So we're going to keep the lights on with the current finance and operations systems for at least 5 more years. We're going to build a lot of integrations so we have consistent data. New projects and projects that are in their infancy, we'll move to the new finance system as soon as we get it operational later this year, towards the end of this year. They'll move to it, happily move to it. We're already having those discussions with them. The other ones we'll have integrated. They'll still be working in their systems, but there'll be APIs connecting, obviously. We have a pretty robust integration team, and we have a real life, I would say, integration environment where live data is going through all these systems and connecting them through APIs. So you will have an interim state of time where the legacy systems as well as the modernized systems will be online, connected to each other and into the data lake. Just an example that's tangible of how the systems work together. So we're very, I guess, insistent on scoping the finance system quite narrowly. So the best in class comes straight out of the box. It's, as you would expect, accounts payable, accounts receivable, inventory, general ledger, all those things. And very specifically scope that. The OMS is scoped just for that project lifecycle, but your project financials will be in the OMS, the operational system, not in your, and it feed into your finance system. And let's, for instance, if there's somebody who's procuring concrete at the project, they'll be in the operations system, but it's going to have APIs connected to the inventory. So pulls information out of the inventory automatically. They don't have to go from system to system. They're all connected in that way. In fact, your finance system is connected to your operations system in 20 different places through APIs. And then it'll be connected to your legacy system too. So you can see there's twice as many interim touch points and APIs as in the final environment. And for the operations system, we're going to also roll it out by function. So procurement is one that is really eager to move to it. So when we do make that operations selection, procurement would be the first ones that move to it. And then you would have the project lifecycle and the estimation tendering would come afterwards.
Okay. Just give me a brief sense of the process mapping involved in making this move. Obviously, you're moving from a system that has been in for quite a number of years and has probably got some customizations to it to a more out-of-the-box, less customized approach, which is on trend with industry. But I just wondered, in terms of mapping the existing processes to the new ones, how you're sort of approaching that and how it's going.
I laugh because you say some customization. You can imagine how much customization there is.
Yeah, I was probably understating it.
We have a team of developers, and you can imagine that have designed the system to meet the process 100% way at the process. So the processes that haven't had to change in 30 years. And the industry is very much an instinctual, we've done it this way for 70 years type of industry. So the processes are good, right? And to be able to move that development team to an IoT development team, Power Apps development team is awesome. I can't wait for that to happen. So we shift the organization too. But it's a lot of work. So we've already been on this journey for 3 months for the finance system. We've documented all the processes for finance, operations, health and safety, people. So we've looked at all the processes. And I'd like to give a shout out now, I think, to something we call the John Holland Way. So right next to the digital transformation is a very robust project called the John Holland Way. It's looking at all the processes across the entire enterprise for sustainability, repeatability, modernization. So we really work hand in hand where they're looking at all the processes and we're looking at all the automations and data and connection. So this work has been ongoing for a while, actually, with the John Holland Way has been ongoing for a year and a half, looking at all the processes. Now we come in and we document all of them across all the lifecycle, what's going into this system for automation, what's going into that system for automation. So we understand the picture up front over the last year and a half, especially the last 4 or 5 months of the FMS, the finance system. We do understand all the processes. The finance team, for instance, and the operations team, they're willing to understand and make the change to that mapping that you talk about, make the change to their processes to make them a little bit more modernized and out of the box. So we've already started those discussions. It's why we're taking up to a year to put the finance system in place. It's all of the workshops that have to happen, all the process documentation. We've already agreed on the high level changes that will happen to the finance community, the roles, responsibilities, processes, and things of that nature. We've worked with Workday. We have an implementation partner in KPMG that's helping us do the system integration piece. So they have a lot of experience in moving from legacy processes and automation to modern. So I guess the answer is we take a very involved approach where the finance community owns that change that's going to happen because it's their processes. We steer them. We bring the partners on that are going to help. We have the functional and technical aptitude within our team, the IT team. They understand functional, and we built the team to understand functional finance requirements, processes, HR processes, operations processes. We built the team specifically this way where we can guide everybody in a path forward. So it's going to take a year, because we want to do it properly and slowly implement change processes and get everybody's roles and responsibilities quite well ironed out.
One thing we haven't touched on, and I think we've just briefly touched on it with the chat about the John Holland way was around the culture aspect of this project as well. So the idea of embedding digital thinking and really uplifting the organizational culture from a digital perspective as well. And I wondered if you might talk a little bit about what activities are going on in that sphere as well.
That's the biggest shift, you know, from a construction perspective. It's not that we don't want to use technology. We do, and we know that it can make a difference. But this is a 70-plus-year-old company that is just an icon in Australia from an infrastructure perspective. What haven't we built? We rebranded a couple of years ago to add the people to our brand. So it's really about people. It's really about sustainability. It's really about community and all of those things. Those are the strategic pillars of the company. What we've done is, from the digital perspective, we've tied our transformation strategy to those pillars of the company. We said, okay, what are graduates who come in, who have this experience, what are they expecting? What kind of a culture in the uni? They come from a digital culture. What do we need to do to kind of slowly transition this culture? It's a lot of change management. It's a lot of communications. It's a lot of discussion about what that really means to them. How do we really infuse that culture? We had a slide that showed current culture, it showed technology-enabled culture, and it showed ones and zeros as part of the DNA of our logo. We have to get to that ones and zeros embedded into our logo and DNA. So to do that, again, I stress change management, but we actually, when I joined, I wanted a change management function in IT that was never there before, communication and change management function. And what we've been able to do is show them what it means to them and give them technology. So we've given them the latest mobile, whether it's a Samsung or an Apple. We've given them, you know, really, really good Lenovo technology from a device technology. We've shown them how their roles and responsibilities as we go through this are going to change. We show them how their jobs are going to get much easier through automation, consistent automation that these products bring just out of the box and with regular updates.
And just as a side note to that, how do you see it permeating down into the scoping and speccing of the projects? Because you mentioned, obviously, you're a large project-based organization. You have specific processes in place around how you would approach those bids, for example. How do you see the culture of digital and this digital thinking impacting what they would do on a regular basis?
In the past, again, even the bid process, there's a lot of work that goes into it, as you know, but a lot of it's instinctual. We've done it this way and it works well for us. And you take what data you have, what worked well in the previous bids, what you won, what you didn't win, all that stuff. But even the bid team realizes that they need more data. They need to see the results of how a project is executed as opposed to what the bid was, what the result is. Because a lot of it, they're just feeling it now. And there might be a little bit of a natural disconnect between the bid process and operations. You see that in every construction company, infrastructure company. They aggressively bid something and then the operations team has to deliver it. 10% productivity each year when your margin is less than that, it's tough. So I think that they understand what technology and digital can do for them as far as real-time data with this operations system. There's a connection between the bid process and the whole life cycle of the project. So you have your financials, your scheduling, all the stuff is tightly bundled and connected together, which feeds into your finance system. And then the innovation in the bid process itself, as far as we've been able to automate a lot of the processes of the scheduling of resources and how that bid process is operated. You know, oftentimes you use Salesforce and some things for your customer relationship, and we do have Salesforce, but how Salesforce is connected to the other systems and things like that. So the bid process is going to be much more data rich, let's say, as we pull the information together and we build the data lake. It's going to be much more dynamic as far as we've been able to really drive down IT costs with newer technology, with automated and streamlined processes. The IT cost has actually gone down and we've been able to invest some of that in emerging technology proofs of concept, which is really, really super exciting that the company is actually investing an amount of money in proofs of concept for emerging tech instead of like charging the business or the customer or whatever. We're actually, the IT team is able to invest because we really optimized our costs last year. And in the bid process, they've seen that since we've been able to optimize costs through digital initiatives, we've been able to add more of those. And this is a key point that I want to bring up. Add more of the value add to the end customer. So if the IT cost was $1 million, now the IT cost might be $1 million, but 500,000 of it is not back office developers of that ERP. 500,000 of it is, we're going to give you digital twin that's going to give you this advantage where you didn't have that before. It's going to help us win deals through innovation. It's going to help us optimize our bids so that we're more effective. And that's not just in the IT spend, because you know the IT spend is like less than 1% of the bid, right? What it really does is think of it this way. Up to 70% of our cost of executing a project in this industry is labor and supply chain. If we can give 1% effective using Amazon, for instance, as supply chain excellence, online auctioning, real-time delivery of the materials to the project, if you can give 1%, it's tens of millions of dollars. The customer, who might be the government, reaps the benefits of that. The bid, winning the bid, reaps the benefits of that. Everything is enriched because of the productivity we're giving in labor, supply chain, with the emerging technology, which includes the bid process. It's going to be, like I said, the data. It's going to be more effective. We're going to be able to be more competitive. All these things are attached to what we're doing from this digital transformation.
Maybe on the emerging technology side of things, you talked a little bit about instrumenting things. You talked a little bit about IoT. Obviously, this goes back into the data infrastructure, which is something that's also in development as well. Where are you at in terms of your thinking on this? How far do you see it going down? Because we see some players in the hire industry, for example, instrumenting a lot of excavators and equipment and machinery and things, and then providing this as data, as APIs to feed into sort of construction projects. The miners as well are doing this in a big way, in a big scale. You look at Woodside, for example, it was instrumentation across all the plants and things. So how far do you see this going? Where's your thinking on it at the moment? What looks feasible or realistic as something that would actually provide value?
I tell you, it's not aspirational anymore. I mean, it can really happen. The technology is there. The foundational systems are there. The data is delivered in big bulks in real time to wherever you need it now. All these things you talked about are possible now. I think the reason they're going to be more possible for us over the next few years is because we're doing the foundational things too. We're not going to be consistently developing our ERP because we're going to be in best for business systems for each of the functions that we have. Think of it this way. So let's look at labor productivity for a second. You have your design, your BIM modeling, 3D design of the facility, down to the rivet. All the pieces are there in the design. And everybody's using BIM now, obviously. And you have your operations system, if you have it in place, with the scheduling and the progress of the project and everything on a real-time basis. You throw the Internet of Things in and you're tracking, let's say, GPS RFIDs and maybe helmets of your subbies who come into the project. If the government allows it, obviously, unions and government allow it when they're on the project. And you're seeing where they're supposed to be each day. It's feeding back real time into your enterprise system. Let's talk about Sydney Football Stadium for a second. You have a 3D depiction of the stadium. You have an enterprise system in place that's in tune with all of your financials, your scheduling, and everything. You have facade work that's supposed to be done. You have material that's supposed to be coming in. You're tracking the material, which we've done in one of our projects. We had a project that had a limited period of time to do 90% of its work. And it was big facade pieces, big pieces of prefab supplies needed to come in. We tracked each of those trucks and the pieces of prefab material themselves. And the government said, you know, we're not worried about traffic jams. We're going to open up your hours of operation because you're telling us exactly where everything is from the manufacturer all the way to the project. Then when it gets to the project, you can track the subbies as they're moving around and you can collaborate or corroborate that with what they're supposed to be doing each day. You have drones that are looking at not just defects, but completion percentage of the projects. They're feeding that already into the model that you have. All of a sudden, Sydney Football Stadium, the roof goes yellow or it goes red because, okay, some materials aren't coming. You're tracking the cranes, right? So you're looking at the crane operation in real time because you're tracking that via GPS also. The crane is not really where it's supposed to be at this point. So all of these things are already possible and they're being done in pockets, I would say. But by having the focus on emerging technology, by having the data availability that there is now, by having this, the core systems in place that are corroborating all this data, feeding it into your finance system, the sky's the limit, really. all of these things from health and safety, site access, productivity across the project, machinery, plant, equipment, tracking, all of those things can be done now. Companies that can do that across your entire enterprise and all of your projects are going to have a really big advantage. And then your whole supply chain, as you referred to, Rye, the whole supply chain, if they're on the same products as you, if they're on the same automation as you, they can all be tracked in real time. And you'll know weeks in advance where some issues might come up where you would know when it didn't show up in the past, even recently in the past. So it's technology, data, systems, it's all available now to do this on a grand scale, tracking everything across the life cycle of supply, production, corroborating that with your core system and the timing and scheduling. So I'm so super excited that we're doing it in pockets now. Next year, we'll be doing it even better because we'll have some connected systems. The year after, we might have some robotics and 3D thrown in, as well as the rest of the emerging technologies that we're using. We're using them all. We're using augmented reality, virtual reality in the design. We're using digital twin to a degree in the design, as well as in the operate and maintain. We're looking at autonomous rail cars with the different government agencies, where 5G has now enabled that rail car to be a complete user experience with their iPads or whatever. It can check the traffic conditions of the tracks. It can check the signaling. It can check the maintenance of the track, which comes from your digital twin, as far as you have sensors on the tracks that check for, you know, instead of having people go out all the time. All of these things can be done now for autonomous cars, for project operations, all the way from design, construct, operate, and maintain. So these things are reality now. The investment is there now. The IT companies that were not really looking at our industry before are looking at our industry now. The government agencies are wanting to sponsor and support this now because it's good for them also. So I'm really bullish on the fact that doing this right and building the foundation incremental pieces, as well as looking at those disruption technologies and pulling them together, is going to completely change our industry in the next few years, completely.
Just to counterbalance that a little bit, and not to be negative on it, I just wonder, although there's a lot of things that you can do now, there's cost associated with it. And commonly, there's also not wanting to be first either, to be the one that has to test the vendors, to be the first vendor's test company to go through that process and actually make it work and make it happen within your organization. So I wondered how you think about that and how you counterbalance the risks against the sort of bullish rewards that you might receive from this.
Yeah, that's a great point, Rye. So I think we're taking a measured approach, meaning we're looking at the different technologies. We're looking at digital twin this year across design, construct, operate, and maintain, but we'll do it for maybe proof of concept at one project or another, one infrastructure and one vertical construction, let's say, not across everything. I see other companies, you know, investing tens of millions of dollars in digital twin. For us, it's going to be a fraction of that. While we're building the foundational data and enterprise systems, connected systems and everything, we're going to do POCs of these technologies at different places, like we're already doing them, to get the pilot and proof of concept that it's going to work. Then that's a measured approach, meaning we're not the first ones doing it on a large scale, but we're the first ones, from what I see, that have put all these pieces together and seeing how the information is corroborated within your systems and everything. Then we'll have the foundation to cascade it to other projects and make it a part of our bid for all future projects, all these different emerging technologies and everything. So you have to take a measured approach, I believe, when it comes to doing it across your enterprise, because that's tens of millions of dollars, if not $100 million of investment, when I think you can do a $1 or $2 million investment in a very pointed way using a few different emerging technologies together. And that's going to give you much, much better benefits in the end. I do say in our digital transformation strategy, we are brave and bold. And I really believe that we will be brave and bold because everybody's on the same page in the company. But we will also take that approach, as you said, of let's make sure it works in certain pieces and then cobble them together and then cascade across the enterprise.
I think the challenge in that space that I've seen is finding things that will work in that small scale POC, but then actually being able to scale it. A lot of organizations seem to hit scaling challenges, even though they've tried to start small and they've tried to prove it out.
My philosophy on that, and this is a Roger philosophy, the baseline systems and processes are really important, and the data lake is very important. So if you're in an operation system that's built just for that, which is what we're going to be doing, instead of jamming everything into an ERP, it's built specifically for that. It's connected to a finance system that's built specifically for that, a people system, a health safety system. And these are cascaded across all of our business units. So they're all on a common platform of everything. Because I've seen other companies that are very large, very multinational companies, competitors, that have different ERPs across different business units and things of that nature, which would make it very difficult to scale things across. That's not the case with us. We're going to be on one platform for operations for all of our project businesses, one for finance for all of them, and they're connected. That's one reason it's easier to scale, because you have a core foundation that's, you're all singing from the same sheet of music. Now, the reason we want to do a proof of concept for things like digital twin in tunneling, as well as building Sydney Football Stadium, is because they're very different businesses, right? The 3D software that you use for each of them is different. For your horizontal construction, it's your tunneling, it's Bentley's ProjectWise is the software that's used for the 3D depiction. It's the best in the industry. But for your vertical construction, it's Autodesk that's used for your BIM. So those are inputs into your operations system. And if you have consistency from the inputs, as well as the foundational systems, even though you have different types of construction, you can see commonalities and you can get more of a value of, if we have one tunneling project, one mega project going to the next one, it's going to be 95% the same. You have one stadium you built, it's going to be 95% the same as another one, as far as the foundational pieces. So that's why I think we'll have a better chance of executing across the enterprise, because of the foundational pieces that we're putting together and the consistent data, the consistent processes, the consistent automation, is going to give us a better chance to be successful from an enterprise perspective, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there any other Roger philosophies in play here with the digital transformation?
No, I'm just super excited, Rye, because I've had a chance now. I've been in a few of these engineering construction roles, and I come from a service and technology background. And gaining that depth into our industry and building my team full of people who are come from that industry, not just technology, they come from HR, they come from operations. They were running a project from a cost control perspective, and now they're in the IT team. So being business centric, understanding the business, doing everything for that business and operations, where IT is not a back office function, but it's a really enabling partner, that's truly important. You can't digitally transform without that. Because an IT project will never be successful, but an IT plus a business project will be successful on that journey. So being in best-in-class systems connected, having the business and change management on the journey with you, and just really understanding the industry, those are three things that are very, very important to executing something this big. I think we're kind of lucky too, where we're mostly in Australia. So with my previous role of Multiplex, we had two CEOs, one Northern Hemisphere, one Southern Hemisphere. Great, great, great guys. And I really cherish my time with them. It can be a little bit challenging keeping on the same page, something like that. So I understand the lend leases and things like that, how challenging that would be to drive something centrally when you have a global differences. That's it. I'm more of a common sense, business-centric, standardized approach to these things. I think you'd be much more successful than trying to do the flashy things and do them piecemeal and not have the foundation underneath them. You'll be much more successful, I think, the way that we're looking to do it.
That was Roger Wall, the Chief Digital and Information Officer for John Holland. And that's the podcast for this week. We'll be back with an exciting new interview next week. Until then, you can catch all the latest headlines in Australian IT over at itnews.com.au.